Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today's episode is sponsored by BetBright, where you can join today, deposit £20 and play with 70 across sports and casino. My name is Sam Long and I'm delighted to be joined by Squawker's assistant editor, Jake Entwistle. How are you, Jake?
Good morning, Sam. You went to me first this time. I was rocked then.
Change it up. And also Mohammed Butt, Squawker's chief writer. How are you, Mo?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the second place. It feels very, I was going to say first Mourinho, but not this season.
We're also joined by BetBright's Peter Welch. How are you, Pete?
Very well indeed, lads. How are you?
So the new season is fast approaching. Everyone seems to be getting really excited about what lies ahead, except for Jose Mourinho. He's definitely not a happy bunny at the moment.
No.
So I'd like to discuss if we think he's going to full latter-day Chelsea mode.
Third season syndrome, I believe it's diagnosed as.
Exactly.
I think he sort of, Jose Mourinho is always the manager to go the other way in terms of he'll focus on the negative almost as like a deflective tactic. Mm. So again, it is sort of funny to read how you look at Pep Guardiola saying, I've had the best preseason ever. I love all these young players. They're so willing to learn. Jurgen Klopp saying, oh, this has been so fun. We've learnt so much. And Mourinho saying, none of these are my players. Where's Ashley Young? Where's Fellaini? Give them me back. There's no point. So I think they're all extremes in a way. I think Pep Guardiola would have loved to have some first team players as well to build on, and Jurgen Klopp the same. But it's funny to see that approach, and Jose Mourinho is always going to attract more attention by doing it that way, because he's, again, he said Alexis Sanchez is our only attacker. No wonder he's moping around up front, because he hasn't got anyone on his level. So you imagine that must feel for Tahith Chong and Andres Pereira, sort of young players that big things are expected of. Either he's doing this all on the outside and he's speaking to them saying, great pre-season. That's what we never know, is it? But we only see his outward persona, and he's been talking about his squad like he never wants to see them again. It's really quite bad. And even with the Martial situation, again, there's contrast with Klopp. Klopp saying, oh, we've got another little Kleinie in the world. Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah. He looks happy. And Mourinho was like, the baby's been born. Thank God he's healthy, brilliant. But Martial should be hit. So again, they're just contrast, and you don't know. Maybe you could say that a lot of managers would just say, right, you've had your baby, now you should be here. And maybe just because Mourinho said it comes across, even no one expects a manager to say that. But still, I think the contrasts are there, and it's sowing the seeds for quite a worrying season, or at least start to the season. Even if pre-season isn't a good barometer of your display, I think Mourinho already looks abject, and it's quite worrying.
Regarding the baby thing, I think it's interesting to note that in the middle of a World Cup, Gareth Southgate gave Fabian Delph 5 days off for the birth of his child, right? And Fabian Delph is, he's already got kids, two kids I think he already had before. He's a 29-year-old, he's a veteran in terms of football. Martial is 23, this is his second child, but he's first with this current partner, and it's like, come back here immediately, like, in the middle of a World Cup, Southgate gave Delph 5 days off.
Yeah, I think it was three. Was it three days?
Oh yeah, because
he turned
traveling
around pretty
yeah.
quickly. Yeah,
but still, like he gave him more than like, oh, you've had it. It's the kid's born. Come on, you know. And it's like, and you look at that, and you look at how much Delph repeatedly said that meant the world to me. The squad enjoyed it as well. Mm. And you just look at, I mean, and not to bring it back to the World Cup, but you know, just you look at the way Mourinho handled Martial. It's like, all right, come on, you've had your baby. Come on,
but I think to sort of almost defend Mourinho, which I never thought I'd say, is so I think Martial may have gone about it in maybe a bad way. From what Mourinho, again, this is only based on what Mourinho said, and he was like, oh yeah, Martial just told me 3 days ago he's going to Paris.
Yeah,
so he must have been a bit like, oh.
Yeah.
He might have said, oh, I understand the reason, but please let me know.
This is what we said in the pod last week, actually. We were saying that it's one of those things where, you know, you figure it's going to happen. You just ask for it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't say I'm going to go. You just say, can I go? You know they're going to say yes, but you say anyway. And maybe Martial just didn't.
Yeah.
But I just think, you look at Mourinho, I think totally, this is absolutely third season syndrome. I think it's completely and utterly, he's starting to implode. I know there's always the argument that, oh, is he saying this and then being lovely to the players privately? But you look at how many times when he said this, things have imploded shortly afterwards. I don't think he's saying well done to the players. I think he's, I mean, I'm sure he's not going out to them and going, you're rubbish, mate. Yeah. But, you know, he's creating a negative atmosphere around the club. Look, pre-seasons for elite clubs after tournaments are always hard. All your players are gone. For United in particular, they had a lot of they have key players that went very deep in the tournament. You know, you could argue that two of their three most important players, two of their three most important players were playing on the last weekend of the tournament. Paul Pogba, Romelu Lukaku, all right? So fair enough. But then also their third most important player didn't play the tournament at all, Alexis Sanchez. So it swings and roundabouts. And I'll get to this later, but you know, Mourinho has a good team. It's not the best United side, and you can see why Liverpool smacked them 4-1, because Liverpool have much more in terms of first team players available to them. But you know, there's enough there. He should be doing more with what he's doing.
It's certainly not an ideal situation, but it seems like he's just unnecessarily throwing his toys out the pram to sort of make a point.
Yeah, it's the classic Mourinho. It's, remember, like, the end of 2017, he was flirting with PSG. Or he wasn't openly doing it, but it was all the rumours, like, oh, he wants to go PSG, he's going to go PSG, he's going to go PSG. And then, of course, he signed a new deal with Man United because he made the club fear that he was going to leave. And Ed Woodward was feared that he was going to leave. And Ed Woodward is worried, because I don't think Ed Woodward really knows football in any sort of sense that a director of football, someone who has control over transfers, should know football. I think he's great at getting business. I think he's probably the best in the world at getting business deals, you know, getting them through, getting sponsorships.
They've recently got a tractor sponsor. That was their big January signing.
Well, there you go, exactly. You know, the man is world class at getting sponsorship deals, but that's not the same as dealing with other clubs, as getting transfers through, as identifying talent.
Yeah.
They let their chief scout go, didn't they, like a week ago? And he said there's all the cold talk coming out that he just felt absolutely minimised at the club because no one was listening to him. And it's like, United, it's so strange because obviously Moyes, for all the terrible things that he did modernise United. He brought in a scouting department, actually had them, because under Ferguson, he used his old network because he was the godfather. He didn't need modern scouting in a sense. Moyes and Van Gaal modernised the club. They brought scouts in, established a scouting network, tried to set things up. But with Mourinho, it almost seems like he's gone back to the Ferguson way of doing things. Like, I'm the boss, this is who I want, go sign them for me.
But I'd say that, yes, that may be his approach, but he said, I want two players, I expect one. And for that one, which by the sounds of it was the centre-back, he said he gave them a list of five names a few months ago. So Mourinho, if we've taken his word for it, he's been active in trying to help that recruitment process. And then I do feel sorry for him, because it feels like they've been let down. He may have been let down. He's like, if he gave them a list of five names a few months ago and they haven't identified or brought anyone through, that's bad recruitment.
Yeah.
And it's their recruitment's going to look worse if they get 70 million Harry Maguire, who, yes, is a good signing, but that reeks of like lack of preparation. Like, if you're rushing to get that over the line, and then again, he's mentioned Perisic. He talked about Perisic coming to Man United all through the World Cup during watching Croatia, and then Rebic turned up, who looked like a younger Perisic. So I think Mourinho has low-key identified players he would like. Whether there's some pushback in the recruitment department saying, like, this is not a prudent deal, that's where the conflict's going to come, because Mourinho's like, I want this player because that helps me win games in the style I want to win. Whereas Man United might be saying, we don't want to spend 60 million on 29-year-old Ivan Perisic because there's no return.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think the players he's identified, if you look at the players that have been linked with United, the big links, right? It's Toby Alderweireld, Willian, and Ivan Perisic. What have they all got in common? They're all 29 years old. He wants finished product players because he wants to spend his 2 years at United, win some trophies, and then go.
Yeah.
And United are thinking, well, hang on, this guy wants to sell Martial. United don't want to sell Martial. That's why he's still there, because they know that he's 23. He's incredibly talented, and as soon as you get in a manager that will not treat him like garbage, he will actually probably perform very well for United. And so, look, there's two things here. It's so strange, because in one instance, United, the club are bad and Mourinho is good. On the other hand, the club is good, Mourinho bad. Yeah. United are trying to think for further than next season, and Mourinho is just thinking about next season. He wants to win next season and win now. That's where the club are good. You have to tie with the club. Yeah, okay, it makes sense, United. Why would you want to just turn over everything? Have a bunch of... if he signs, let's just say, right, he gave them this a 29-year-old, right? United sign all the players he wants. United then, in a year, let's say Mourinho lasts a season, right? In a year, United have now got a squad with like key players at 30 years old in every position. And then suddenly you're looking at, suddenly within a year, it's a very old team. 2 years, it's a very old team. And you're looking at, okay, we need to buy, they need to then buy the entire team again. And it's just not a sensible investment. But and it's hard to then sell players who are 30 years old, 31 years old on big contracts who don't want to go anywhere. Like, okay, Alderweireld might be fine for like 4 years because he's a centre-half, although he's getting injured a lot lately, so I don't know about that. But Willian and Perisic are wingers. As soon as they get, if they get one big injury, that's it for them. They're gonna drop off massively because without that explosive pace, you know, there's nothing there. So yeah, Rebic and Maguire and that, they're good alternatives, but you have to wonder how much Mourinho actually wants them versus how much he wants the 29-year-olds. But the other instance, we have to bring this up, is that where Mourinho is almost a good guy, is there is a big problem at Man United. Structurally, the club is not set up to... And I mentioned it earlier, but I mentioned it, maybe I made it sound like too much it was Mourinho's fault. It's not really... It's United don't have a sensible structure of a club. Like I said, they brought in that... I can't remember his name now, the director of football. And the fact that I can't remember his name says everything. Like, how highly was it publicised? How much did he actually have to do? How much did they involve him in transfer? They should have turned the keys over to this guy. You know, you look at what Roma have done with Monchi, for instance, since bringing him in. He's in charge. Now, I'm not saying you're not going to get Monchi, but you have to have a modern structure at a football club. You have to have a working scouting network to look for players. You have to have an ownership that understands what a player's value actually is. And instead, Man United have a chief exec who is obsessed with star signings because they can market the life out of them and make the club loads of money that way, which is all the Glazer family have ever really cared about, is making money. So that they can then redraw their dividends and just live happily off that. It's never really been about winning things, because in the way modern football is set up, you don't need to win things to make loads of money. As long as you're in that top four, getting quarterfinals, semifinals, Champions League, you know, getting in the Champions League every year. As long as you're doing that, the money is basically the same. And I think that's part of the problem at United, is they've got an ownership group and chief exec who's too much into making money rather than winning trophies.
Bringing it back to the top four that you touched on. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Pete. How's United's sort of title chances looking ahead of the season? Are people backing them to drop out the top four and sort of believing Mourinho's negativity, or is there still a bit of positivity in there for them?
It's funny you should say. To win outright, the United are 6-1 with Betbright. I think that's a bit short, especially with the kind of relatively unsettled. I don't know if it's an unsettled pre-season, but it seems like an unhappy pre-season, particularly from the manager's point of view. Going back to your initial question at the start, when you asked, you know, is he going back into sort of latter-day Chelsea mode? I think he is. When he first started himself at Chelsea, I thought it was part of a wider sort of media stunt where he created this us-against-them culture that his players were sort of buy into. And then he kept sulking, he kept moaning, and the results started to deteriorate, and then eventually he got fired. I think it was after the game at Leicester was the last straw at Chelsea there. So this time around at United, he seems to be doing the same thing even before a ball's been kicked in the Premier League. So as I say, the 6-1 with Betbright to win, which, again, based on the manager's attitude, I think is short. Again, you know, if he doesn't stop this sort of monathon, and we've seen it with Chelsea again, back in, I think it was 2016, was it, or 15? I don't think it's going to end well for him or United. For United to get a top four finish, there's absolutely no value. They're 3-10. So I think with or without Mourinho there at the end of the season, it's more realistic than them winning the league at 6-1. But in terms of you're looking for a punt on that, there's no value there at all. I think other teams, in terms of looking at winning the league or finishing higher than United, I think Sarri settled into Chelsea seamlessly in comparison. And if you look at the start, you know, the whole Antonio Conte starting the pre-season with Chelsea, I think he settled in very seamlessly. And the Blues are 11-1 with Betbright. I think the general opinion is that Liverpool got the best squad or best chance they've had since 2005, or it's more, you know, you look even more closer with Brendan Rodgers there. They've shortened again. So when we spoke last week, they were 6-1. They're now 4-1. That's coming in the last week as well. So I think in terms of Premier League outright, there's a lot more sort of contenders that are going to be there at the end of the season. And just judging off the kind of tone that's come out of Man United this season, or this pre-season, should I say, I think 6-1 is a bit short, personally.
So just quickly, before we move on from United, if Mourinho was to go, who do you think they'd go for, and who should they go for?
I don't know. I think that they're... sort of harking back on the problem, I think their problem is that they've got a very short-termist manager who is happy to operate in that way. And Man United are sort of craving that long-term stability and growth. So I think Jose Mourinho and Man United, the conflict will keep coming throughout the season. But in terms of a manager they can get, I think everyone got snapped up really in the summer. So that's why I think, personally, they should have either got rid of him ages ago, because I think the signs were there last season that it's not sustainable. I think their second place last season was, luck is the wrong word, but I don't think it's sustainable. I think David De Gea's season last season was incredible. And although he can repeat the same like greatness, it's not going to be to that extent. That was his best ever season. Like, he prevented 14 goals in terms of like expected goals and stuff. So even if that drops to like 9, which is like sort of the or what other good keepers sort of replicated, then I think Man United's points will drop off massively, because they're not scoring. They haven't got a style of play that is built on a philosophy. It's built on getting a result. And I just always think that's going to ruin you in the long term. So in terms of actually hiring a manager, I don't actually have a name that I'd be able to...
They'd almost be having to look at who was available.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The season,
so like you've got Tuchel that went to PSG in terms of like project stuff. Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim was called up by Real Madrid, said that he didn't want to move just yet, but is now going to take over RB Leipzig in 2018-19. You've got Emery, obviously, that came to Arsenal, who isn't really like a sort of groundbreaking appointment, but it's still a manager that was available. Mm. And then obviously Sarri's gone to Chelsea. Conte would be the only one, but again, I think he's more of that short term. I'll win you a title, but then we're not going to have much after. Like, you just have to look at Chelsea for that. So
yeah,
Man United may have to stick with Mourinho for this season, but that could be disastrous.
Yeah, Conte is almost as bad with young players as Mourinho is. Although he's, you know, more charismatic against on the touchline, doesn't really move around as much. Look, Man United, you look at their squad, right? Look at the players he's got. Mourinho's complaining, right? This is why I'm saying he needs to go. You look at it, Alexis is there, Twanzebi, Fosu Mensah, Bailey, Herrera, Mata, Gomez, Chong. Okay, Chong's a bit rough and ready, but Shaw, Fred, Joel Pereira, Fred just joined. But there's enough players there you could get something out of them. The fact that Mourinho isn't just points to the fact that, as Jake says, there's going to be a conflict coming. A storm's about to come. What is it in the Terminator? La Viena La Tormenta, you know, the storm is coming. You can see it. It's going to come. He's going to pick a fight with Paul Pogba, is my guess, is how it's going to happen this year, because there's no Eva Carnero who he can just, abuse in a gross display of misogyny. So I think he'll pick a fight with Paul Pogba, just because he did it all last season. And I think it'll escalate from there. I think the club will sort of realise, they said that, we'll back Mourinho over any player, and they'll sort of realise, okay, Pogba just won the World Cup, one of the most beloved players in the world. Are we really going to back this guy over Pogba? I don't think so. And I also just agree with Jay again. They should have sacked him after they won the Europa League. That was the mission that he got there to do, get them back in the Champions League. He did it after the first season, and there were signs even then that he'd taken them as far as he could. They should have lost to Celta Vigo in the semi-final. John Guidetti missed a sitter. And the way they played that semi-final after Zlatan's injury was so risk-averse and just really almost self-defeating. So they got away with it then. They won the Europa League because Ajax are a bunch of small children and they bullied them physically. They should have sacked him right there and then, because he was never going
to
build on that.
I understand why they didn't, but they
should have done. And okay, if they didn't, they should have sacked him at the end of last season, because again, as Jake says, that was unsustainable. That was never going to continue. Mm-hmm. David De Gea was out of his mind. Lukaku played really well down the stretch. Martial, Rashford, each had key moments. Jesse Lingard had amazing stretch.
They started the season so well last season because they were completely fresh and they were getting all these 4-0.
Yeah.
So after like 6 games, I remember they had the exact identical stats to Man City.
Yeah.
Like, get goals scored, goals conceded, points, wins, everything, even like chances created were matching. So it was like, hold on, Man United look great.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh wait, this is because they've developed this. There's developed this system which comes to life after 70 minutes because they've defended and scored one goal.
Yeah.
Other teams think Man United are there to be beaten, and then they just
rip
them to shreds.
And once they stop scoring that one goal, they stop ripping to shreds. But yeah, I think replacements, right, for Mourinho. I do think he needs to go. I think they should sack him now before the season starts, before he causes any damage, because he will cause damage, and it's coming. I absolutely guarantee you, it's coming.
It's just crazy that it's before the start of the season.
It would be a huge, almost a PR disaster, but I think you have to do it, because otherwise it's going to be a footballing disaster. I think it's very obvious. The player he wants, 29-year-olds, wants an army of 29-year-olds in his team. United have got some of the best young talent in the league, right? It's not quite Chelsea levels, right? You know, Chelsea are different class when it comes to young talent, and I think Sarri might actually use some of it. Oh my goodness, this could be fun. But United have got a lot of good young players, a lot of very promising young players. I'm not talking about teenagers, like 21, you're 22, 23. Rashford is young, you know. Pereira looks incredible. You know, like he could be really good. Martial, you know, they've got a lot of young players. Eric Bailly looks very good. Twanzebe should be starting, right? Could be brilliant. They're looking at signing a centre-half. No, just start Twanzebe. So, yeah, they need to get rid of him now. I think they should, well, the guy they should have signed was, they should have got rid of him before the World Cup because they should have signed Luis Enrique. That was the perfect guy to take over from him because he's obsessed with fitness, which is what you want in the Premier League. His sides are disciplined defensively. They know how to play offensively. And in attack, he knows how to get the most out of star players. This is the guy who managed Messi, Neymar and Suarez to a phenomenal level of success. Now, okay, you could argue this Messi, Neymar and Suarez, they can do anything themselves. But organising star talent in that manner to be that cohesive is actually takes skill. It's not just like get out there and play. You know, you can't just say that to them. But they've lost that chance again. He's now Spain manager. So I would say Marcelino from Valencia is the one. He's a very solid manager. He turned Valencia around. Valencia were diabolically bad. He's taken Valencia, turned them into a very, very good team. Now they're a legit contender for the Champions League spot now. I would say he's the one. He can work. He can do stuff immediately, but also he'll help you build long term. And I think that's what United need. They need someone who can perform right now, but who will also build for the future, because that's really what United have their eyes on as a continued way of making money.
I think this season Man United, the best they can hope for is finishing sixth. I think that's where they'll finish.
If they keep Mourinho, I agree with them. If they sat Mourinho, they could finish top four.
But I think that's just such a quick turnaround. Like even then, that would have an impact. Although again, long term, it might be beneficial. But yeah, like looking at their team, and there's that famous image of pre-season where like they've got no. It doesn't matter which players you have available. You should still be implementing a coaching style that's visible. Like you watch Man City, you're like, yes, these players are all 18, but they're playing like Man City. Liverpool, oh, this is a Jurgen Klopp team. Jose Mourinho, it's like you've literally just got 11 players on the pitch and they're doing things. So that's what annoys me the most. Is like, yes, I understand you haven't got players, but why are you not trying to?
I feel like he just senses that it's kind of coming, and he decides this is it. I'm going to.
If they get a tough Champions, if they get a tough Champions League group, we could have. It could be the exact repeat of that Chelsea situation where you finish third in that.
So moving away from Mourinho, we could talk about him all day.
Yeah,
we definitely could.
Obviously, the new Championship season gets away on Friday when Frank Lampard's Derby, still seems strange saying that, play Reading. And I want to know, what have we learned from pre-season about the Chelsea midfielder? How's he going to sort of set his team up? What kind of football are Derby going to play?
Yeah, I think they made some real, that double signing they made of Harry Wilson and Mason Mount is immediately something to get you on board. And I think that's what the appointment of Frank Lampard, I think, was trying to instill a bit more excitement and buzz around Derby County itself. I think they didn't do too badly last season, but they wanted that sort of, we want to do well, but we also want to have sort of people looking to watch us and talking about us. And I think Lampard, he always came across brilliantly as a pundit, and he came across as an intelligent football man. So you hope that transitions well into a style of play. And he obviously has bought Jody Morris, who, in my head, I still think maybe that should be the other way around. Like Jody Morris yeah, literally won every single domestic trophy available to him when he was Chelsea under-18s manager. And again, although he had sort of the Galacticos of the youth sides in England, he still churned them out and they became an incredible team. So I think that's a really exciting duo, and we'll see that in Derby's style of play. The one thing that's, it's the tiniest little moment, but the one thing that is exciting about Derby recently is they in their last game, they beat Wolves 2-1. And the winning goal was scored by Mason Mount arriving in the 6-yard box, turning and just blasting it into the roof of the net, which obviously, if you rewound, put that in a Chelsea blue shirt, it would look like Lampard was doing it. So the signings they've got suggest that they could be really fun. Harry Wilson obviously spent the second half of last season on loan at Hull and was brilliant. Contributed 10 goals in 15 games, scoring 7, assisting 3. He can play all across the front line. They've got they've still got Tom Lawrence, who did really well last season. Then they've got Mason Mount. So they've got a really exciting sort of trio of players that play just behind a striker. I think they're still looking for a striker, though, and that could be maybe the issue, because there's still doubts about where Vidra's going.
They've just got Jack Marriott from Peterborough. scored a lot of goals
in League One.
But
yeah, so is that,
gonna make this
again, I think that's because of that front three they've got, all you need is someone that will score goals. So that makes sense. You build all your play through these three players that are technically brilliant, young, exciting, can create, can score themselves, and then you have someone there to just clean it, hoover it up, all the pieces. Yeah.
I think Mason Mount's going to be amazing this season. Just like you saw Real Madrid, you saw Isco finally come to life under Zinedine Zidane, because they were, as players, basically the same, you know, in terms of style. Languid, attacking midfielders who drift out to the left and just create havoc, dribbling, excellent, not lightning quick, but really fast, perceptive, and score goals, create goals. You saw that happen. Mason Mount, as Jake just described there, he very much has a lot of the young Lampard in him. And I think you'll see him, I just think he'll come to life. I think, because first off, playing, he's a Chelsea boy, so playing with Frank Lampard anyway, he's like, oh my God, I'm playing for Frank Lampard. And then he's also got Jody Morris, who coached him when he was playing for Chelsea. And he's got Frank Lampard. Like, imagine training with Frank Lampard every day if you're that kind of midfielder. That's like invaluable. Like, you can imagine, you can just imagine, obviously I'm not sure if they do it, but you can just imagine Lampard, like Zidane would do for Madrid players, just teeing up Morris for like volley practice or something. And you can imagine, you know, look, Morris last year for Vitesse, right? He had 14...
Mount. Started talking about the assistant manager.
Yeah. Mount for Vitesse, right? Got 14 goals, 9 assists, 47 dribbles, 33 tackles. 14 goals is third most in the Vitesse team. 33 tackles is seventh. And then dribbles and assists are first. And he's a teenager. He's playing with grown men grown man league, basically. You know, this is not like youth football. This is in serious football. I think he'll be incredible. Who's my voice, man? It's so exciting.
Getting too worked up about Mason Mount.
No, look, I think he's going to be phenomenal this season. I think he's going to have such a good season. I think as long as Derby can find a striker who can score the goals when the football isn't flowing as well, which you always need in the Championship, he can fire them to the Premier League. I think, honestly, I just think it's such a hand-in-glove fit with both his ex-coach at Chelsea and his what can only be his idol. You know, it's going to work. I think.
Yeah, so Derby certainly going to be aiming to be there or thereabouts. And as well, the three relegated Premier League clubs from last season, Swansea, West Brom and Stoke, are all going to be, you'd like to think so, aiming for an immediate return. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Pete. Who do you think looks the most stable out of those three, and who looks most in danger of doing a Sunderland, as it were?
Well, as you say, Sam, it's a big transition going from the Premier League. They're obviously going to lose a few players each. Looking at, well, firstly, who can do a Sunderland? We've got Swansea 33-1 to get relegated, Stoke 51 to get relegated, West Brom 40-1. So chances are, if you look at within, there'll be sort of the betting, we're very unlikely to see a sort of a double relegation back-to-back from either of those sides. To get promoted again, Stoke 7-4, West Brom 5-2, and Swansea, if I can just find it there, would be, where are we, Swansea, 7-2 as well. From a betting perspective, it looks relatively positive for the three sides that have just gone down. I think if you look at it, Derby 12-1 to win the Championship outright, but I think the bet there is for them to be promoted, which is 4-1. I think that's a great shout. I think obviously if the Premier League is the most competitive in the world, I think the Championship is very close behind, if not up there with it. I think Lampard's going to have a very interesting, exciting season, both sort of for him to develop as a manager and his young, as you say, players like Mason Mount to prove themselves and try and get their name out in the football world. So I think to win the Championship for Derby might be a bit too optimistic. I think 4-1 there is a great shout for them to go up. Second favourites to go out are West Brom at 8-1. I think that could be a decent bet. They obviously finished very strongly at the end of last season. And you could say they're unlucky to go down eventually, but obviously the course of a season doesn't lie. So 5-2 for West Brom to get promoted as well, I think could be a decent shout.
Yeah, I think they've got Darren Moore from the off now, haven't they?
Yeah.
And he obviously turned their season around. So
yeah, they were phenomenal. I mean, really genuinely very good under Darren Moore. They were so organised. I just remember watching them play United at Old Trafford, and I remember saying, I think I tweeted something like this after the match, that Darren Moore's West Brom played more organised, composed and a football with an idea and a purpose than Man United did all season in that one game. And I just thought, if he had more time, he would have kept them up. They were really, really good on him. I think they're ideally set up to play well in the Championship, purely because their squad is Tony Pulis' squad. It's in full of enormous dudes. So I think immediately...
But they have an actual Tony Pulis team to compete
with. Yeah. Well, that's true, but I just think they won't actually... Like, a lot of the problem with the Championship when teams get relegated from the Premier League is Championship isn't just a bruising physical league, but it is a bruising physical league. Obviously, there's obviously more to it. Technical players, technical teams can thrive. We saw with Fulham last year. Yeah. But it can be physically demanding, not just in terms of strength, but in terms of stamina and energy. And I think having a team like West Brom, who are so set up, used to playing under Tony Pulis, full of huge guys, Higazi, Livermore, Chadli, Rondon, for goodness sake. And not only are these big guys, he's a good guy, really good. Chadli was a World Cup sensation. So I think West Brom are very, very ideally set up with Darren Moore as well, who I thought was excellent last season. I think we'll probably replicate that again from the off. As long as they don't lose too many players. I mean, all three relegated teams lost their goalkeepers, which I think is interesting. Well, I mean, Stoke technically still already have Jack Butland, but you figure he'll go as well, and join Lee Grant and leaving the Potteries. But West Brom got in Sam Johnston, which I think Stoke got in Adam Federici, who's, I mean, you know, a bit of an icon, cult hero. But I think Sam Johnston coming into West Brom, that's actually a very good signing. Yeah, ex-Man United goalkeeper, young player.
Looked good at Villa last year.
Yeah, looked good at Villa. Very big, very physical. And obviously, yeah, before has done well in the Championship. So I think West Brom have set themselves up very well. And I think West Brom and Derby, I think for me, I mean, I know Derby might be a bit optimistic, but you know, I'm just besotted.
Yeah, it's excited.
Besotted with Mason Mount and Frank Lampard. So I just think West Brom are very good. I think West Brom are in the best health to come back. I'm a bit worried about Swansea, though.
Yeah.
They haven't signed anyone, or one player, I think, maybe. And Fabianski was very good last season, and they still went down. And they've got Fabianski now, so...
They've lost Key
Sung Young.
Yeah, Fabianski. But they've got in a manager that everyone wanted to be given a chance in England, didn't they? We saw him with... Osterson played some very good football against Arsenal. Everyone witnessed that, but even beyond and before that game, Graham Potter was getting plaudits, very rightly so, for doing well with a team with very limited resources and sort of instilling a philosophy and having this club that played football he wanted to play. So Swansea, I do agree they're at the biggest risk of plummeting straight back down, but I purely think that's because of, again, the setup, and as Mo said, like, they're going to have to rely a lot on their academy next season, it feels like, at the moment, which could be brilliant. It could end up proving really good. They could unearth some brilliant youngsters there and give them the minutes they need to perform well. But if you look at what West Brom have got, if they keep hold of them, it's a Premier League squad, really, isn't it? Like, not a good one, but you'd associate with it. And then you've got Stoke have bought players that are addicted to promotion. Mm. They've bought Tom Ince, who... can get anyone promoted, but can get anyone relegated, it seems. Then they've got Ben Okafobe, who was fired Wolves to the Premier League last season. Wolves bought him and thought, oh, Stoke, you need to get promoted. Here's a striker that's good at doing that. So I think the signing Stoke have made. And then they nicked McLean off West Brom, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, a shrewd one.
Who isn't necessarily a world beater, but in the Championship, great engine, up and down, great winger in terms of, like, getting to the great winger in terms of what he does is typically a winger, not being fantastic in himself, but he's a Championship-esque player, if that's not too unfair to say. So Stoke have sort of said, right, this is the formula for getting promoted. And as we said, they've got Gary Ware from Derby, who did well at Derby. So they've got all the pieces, I think, to make the best push, because it's very much built for promotion. But again, whether that becomes sustainable afterwards is unlikely. But
I think what's very interesting with Stoke is that they build themselves and thrived on being the underdogs in the Prem for so long, whereas now they're the favourites and they're the big fish. Everyone's going to be turning up at Stoke. It's the biggest game of the season.
Yeah.
How are the club going to react to that?
That's a good point. And I think with the West Brom stuff, they were very good last season under Darren Moore because they were extremely well organised. Now, again, West Brom are in a similar position, or if not as stark a sort of, these are the big club, but it's going to be like, all right, West Brom, you've just got relegated. Come and attack us. And we haven't seen that yet from Darren Moore. I'm not saying he doesn't have that in his locker as a manager, but his remit last season was, do not concede a goal and we might get a draw and we might get a 1-0 win. Whereas, is that then transferable to when you are expected to have 60% of the ball?
Yeah.
I'm interested to see it, and I'm not saying he doesn't have it, but I feel like we're going to see a very different West Brom, or we should see a different West Brom next season.
I think that it can almost be an advantage to almost fly under the radar a bit in the Championship and not have everyone talking about you week in, week out. Yeah, Cardiff, yeah. the opposite of what Wolves did last season. That's my next topic. Obviously, they've been signing loads of players, brought in Moutinho. And I want to know if you think the hype is justified, or are they going to struggle to stay up, or are they going to push on and get top 10 like everyone seems to be sort of tipping them for?
I do think they'll get top 10, but I don't think they'll start the season like a house on fire, because they've got so many new players and they need to acclimatise and get them all gelled in. Plus, Rui Patricio is their star signing. I think he's only just joined pre-season. He was at the World Cup for a long time. So they've signed so many good players. I've been cautioning this the whole time, because I've been saying that their squad is great set up for it, but Nuno Espirito Santo is volatile. And you know, Valencia went from brilliant to bad almost overnight with this guy. So there, it could be that it literally implodes from day one, because that's the weird thing about Nuno Espirito Santo. It has the capability to do that. But equally, as long as he doesn't implode in a Mourinho fashion, what have they got in common? Jorge Mendes' agent, by the way. As long as Espirito Santo keeps his head and doesn't implode, their squad is set up so that, yeah, they might have some teething problems initially, but they've got so much, an abundance of quality. And in Ruben Neves, literally one of the best central midfielders in the Premier League. I think they will get top 10 eventually, but they may not start that way. They may need to pick up some steam, because I think they've got a lot of players to come, a lot of players to integrate. But I mean, the sheer amount of talent they have, yeah. And it's all in. It's not like a top heavy squad or a defense heavy squad. It's all spread out over the team and in sensible positions, and they've all got complementary pieces. And yeah, as long as Espirito Santo keeps his head, I think they will.
I think I found it quite odd they sold Barry Douglas. If you look at, like, Leeds have bought someone, and Leeds are another team that are really interesting, obviously, because they've got Marcelo Bielsa. But so them signing Barry Douglas is very much identifying, how did Wolves get promoted? Oh, this guy got 14 assists. Let's get him. So again, there are these weird players that you feel like are built to get promotion campaign, but Wolves obviously thought, that's good money for him. They've signed Vinagre on a permanent deal, and they bought Johnny from Atletico, who had literally just bought him from Celta Vigo. So that was a funny one.
Jorge Mendes.
Yeah. So they've obviously felt like they've got enough fullback cover to get rid of one of their best players last season. I always find that strange with the Premier League stuff. Someone that can be so integral to a championship winning or promotion campaign can immediately get sold to someone else chasing that dream rather than being integrated. So
it seems very harsh, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems very harsh, but I think there maybe is an awareness, like, his skill set was suited to that particular thing, and now we want to develop. So Barry Douglas was obviously happy to go, and I think he's going to be playing in a very exciting, if not, again, volatile is a word that we're using a lot, but it is. Marcelo Bielsa spent, I think he's got a record of 3 days at one club. So
yeah, Leeds are going to be fun to watch, yeah. Which is the first time I've said that in a while.
Yeah, so yeah, Wolves, I think maybe not top 10, but I think they should again, given the players they have, like Diogo Jota, their front three is, they've got some really exciting young players there, and then a midfield two of Moutinho and Ruben Neves, that could be Portugal's midfield if they fancied Neves, and obviously he's like the youngest ever Champions League captain, so he's not scared of anything. So they have players and a base of players to, you think, would avoid relegation. It's just whether, yeah, so they've got rid of one of their key parts. Now, I think there's still a bit of a worry about forwards, because they bought Raul Jimenez and they've got Bonatini. And Bonatini obviously scored bucket loads last season, but it's weird that you see this and they find the need to want to upgrade that. So I'm just erring on the side of caution of whether they had a squad too good for the championship, but now will they have to sort of rein back their style a bit, and will that transition happen? So I don't expect them to go down, but I maybe don't expect them to sort of start blowing people away.
I mean, Johnny is a very good centre-back signing, very, very, very solid defensively. He's the kind of guy you look at where a lot of danger comes in the Premier League, comes from the right-hand side of attacks. Johnny's very good at shutting down attackers, so I think that's going to be really important. I think with regards to... I think Raul Jimenez is a very good target man striker. He's very good at bringing others into play. But I think I kind of agree with Jake. The one thing they should probably look at getting maybe is a Premier League goal scorer. Or not Premier League, top division kind of goal scorer. I mean, Jorge Mendes must have about 50 on his book somewhere. So I'm sure he can hook them up. that's the one thing maybe, because you always think if you have a goal scorer, you have a chance. If you don't, you know, if you but don't.
Interesting that they sold Afobe, really.
I mean, well, that's what I mean. He's obviously not. He's obviously been there with Bournemouth before. He's been in the Premiership and he's not scored. Yeah. So again,
which in itself suggests that they are aiming higher than just survival.
Yeah, exactly. And the formation they've been playing in pre-season is a 3-4-3, and they've been having Jimenez or Bonatini as sort of the link man.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be relying on goals from Cavallero and Jota and Helder Costa as two. They'll always have a target man and then two forwards behind them that they're going to expect the assists and the goals to come from. So if it seems like they've got an idea, and as we said, if they're selling players that have been so good in Championship seasons, they do have visions to break that top 10. Whether that happens in the first season remains to be seen, but I definitely you'd be shocked if they went down, and that would be I think that would be a disaster if they did. Someone getting that amount of backing and bringing in a European champion, two European Championship winners, you can't get relegated.
It's interesting because so many times all three teams that come up, they're instantly being tipped to go down. It's quite refreshing to have one that's actually come up, whether the Mendes stuff sits well with you or not, to actually have someone come up and have people talking about, oh, they could if it all goes well, top six.
Yeah, top six maybe not. But
I think that's happened. So obviously all the promoted teams stayed up last season, and that was the first time it had happened it's only the third time it's happened in Premier League, full stop. And this season, again, it's like, well, Fulham look good, Wolves look good, and I think Cardiff, the only one, because of the way they played, is where you think, or maybe they're just going to get put under a bit too much pressure. But I initially thought they'd had quite a bad transfer window, and then because they've signed Championship players, so they've done the opposite. So they've got Bobby Reid, who obviously had a brilliant season, and they've bought
him.
I don't think
that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, that's what I mean. But they're the ones I'm more of those promoted teams, I think. Maybe it's with my heart that I think Fulham will do well, because that could be completely naive. They could try and impose 60% possession and just get counter-attacked by every team in the division and lose 4-0. So again, I sort of maybe hope Fulham do well. I think Wolves will do well, and I think Cardiff will do the worst.
I think Fulham are going to be kind of like, do you remember Blackpool under Ian Holloway? They're gonna win some games in some lovely fashion, and then just gonna get slapped by someone. They'll play a top six away, and they'll just get absolutely hammered. But when they're playing the majority of teams, top six, not including Man United, because they'll probably outplay Man United. But everyone else, you know, I think they'll give them a good game. I think they've got a proactive game plan. I think they've got Seri is a brilliant signing, and Ryan Sessegnon is an X factor.
Seri, Schürrle, Sessegnon, and then they're getting in. So you mentioned earlier, Mo, about how Fulham sort of, or in the Championship, you need that bit of physicality.
Yeah.
They brought in the most physical striker in England at the moment, in Mitrovic, and he propelled them to that 22-game winning streak, unbeaten run, sorry. So them getting him, 22 million seems like a lot, but that is the Fulham of this beautiful side to watch. What do they need? Someone that can throw some elbows to give space for Seri, Kearney, Schürrle, Sessegnon.
I would say what will help them as well is Craven Cottage.
It's so unique.
They're guaranteed to beat one of the big boys at Craven Cottage.
Probably Arsenal.
Man United as well. Come on, lads. I would be surprised if Fulham.
It's not Wenger anymore.
Don't do the double over Man United. Yeah, it's not Arsenal. You can't. This thing, you can't make the same predict Arsenal now. No, none of the stereotypes apply. They might still apply. We don't know. It's so weird. You have to sort of go into season like, wait, can we make those jokes about Arsenal again? I don't know. Can we? Because do they fit? We don't know. But I'll tell you what, Fulham will definitely take at least 3 points off Man United. I would imagine maybe even 4 or 6.
Okay, moving on to the transfer window. Spurs look set to leave it very late. We all know Daniel Levy doesn't mind a bit of hardball, but is it time for fans to start worrying, or has Poch got something up his sleeve?
Look, man, when you stand right now, Spurs are standing still. When you're standing still atop the Premier League, you may as well be going backwards. City have improved, even if only marginally, with Mahrez. They're still targeting defensive midfielder, just not a famous one. Liverpool have improved leaps and bounds. Chelsea have improved to a degree. United are kind of...
We've said enough.
Spurs, look, man, they've done nothing. Which, okay, fine, that's good, but...
He's got those contracts in, Poch.
He's got the contracts in.
It's like five new signings.
That was the most... Look, Spurs last season were brilliant, but at some point you've got to stay... Their output, they're operating at basically their peak output, their maximum efficiency, right? They're like, they can't wring any more blood from this stone. Do you know what I mean? Or it's like they've how many more miracle perfect seasons is Harry Kane going to have to play? Is Dele Alli going to have to play? Christian Eriksen? These guys haven't really had lulls or any extended sort of bad performances periods because they can't afford to.
But I think that speaks for Pochettino.
Oh, it really does. Pochettino is a brilliant coach and he's done very well with them. And I think that's... But it's just like it's risk assessment, isn't it? It's like, are you betting on that again? I mean, good for you if you can bet on yourself to do that again. But mate, you need some players, man, from the looks of things.
I think what really hasn't helped them is the Alderweireld situation because that they should have had that sorted out months ago. If he's not signing, then get him gone.
Yeah, I think with them, like, the thing is though, because they have that, again, it's almost ultra continuity because literally nothing changes. So whereas I think if I were going to say a top four, I think Man City will win the league again, but it won't be 100 points and stuff. I just think they're good and that they can win the league. And then Liverpool, with their squad and the players they've brought in, they've identified every key area they needed to strengthen and strengthened. Klopp plays plays brilliant football and they can slap teams and they'll be the hardest to beat in that little mini league in top six as well. So I think they'll get second. I think Spurs will finish third because they're so good. And yes, they need stuff, but nothing's changed. Spurs are brilliant. They are really good, and they're the butt of the jokes most of the time. But I think it's more out of jealousy now than actually anything, because it's like, as Mo said, these players are delivering season on season. And yes, they're falling at the final hurdle, so that's why I think they will finish third again. But they are one of the best teams in the league. And then again, maybe it's with heart. I think Arsenal might sneak into fourth, but only because implementing Maurizio Sarri's style takes a season.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to win some games 9-0. I think genuinely we could see some incredible football. But obviously with Courtois, Hazard maybe going, how does he replace them? I think fifth is fair for them and they might win the Europa League that way because he plays brilliant football, but it'll take a season to get used to it. And then, as I said earlier, Man United, Wolves might pip them to sixth based on what going on. But
I think three of the top four are set, I agree with Jack. I think City and Liverpool will finish 1 and 2. I think Spurs are in the top four. I don't know if they finish third, but I think they're in the top four. The other ones, it all depends on anything, because Arsenal, how quickly do they settle? They could be thrilling to watch on the counter-attack, but we know Emery, there's always some flaws in his side.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, and I think Arsenal and Liverpool would be the kings of the cups this year, because Liverpool are a cup team. I don't know, like, they should be really challenging City for the league title in terms of like properly, like, is it who's going to win it sort of thing. But I don't think Klopp's system really lends itself to a league season, especially not one with 38 games and no extended winter break like in the Bundesliga. But I think they're built for cup games. I think they'll make it the Champions League semi-final again. Even not without seeing the draw, they'll make the semis again. They might even make the final again. They might even win it. I think Arsenal are going to be very good in cups because Unai Emery is good in cups.
Europa League legend.
I think Arsenal win the Europa League this year. I would bet on it right now because, I mean, I don't know what the markets are, but I would bet on it right now because, honestly, Unai Emery wins the Europa League and that's what Arsenal brought him to do.
Yeah. The reason I said he'd finish fourth as well because I don't think, as I said, I know I said Sarri's a new manager, but I just think what he's trying to implement into Chelsea is much greater than what Emery will into Arsenal, so I feel like they might benefit from that less intensive change in philosophy.
Sarri and United are X factors. Anything could happen with them. Chelsea could adapt immediately and be top challengers, or United could be good, or they could just implode spectacularly.
What are the top four markets looking like, Pete?
So top four finishing in the Premier League. Man City are 20-1 on, which is not surprised there. Liverpool 5-1 on. United 3-10. Chelsea 4-6. Tottenham 4-5, Arsenal 2-1, which I think is bloody good bet, if you excuse my French.
it's not Wenger anymore, it's got to be Spanish.
I've been saying for the last couple of weeks now, Arsenal were 25-1 to win the league in total. I think that's just unbelievable value. As you say, they're a completely unknown side. They've made some key signings as well, new manager, and BetBright will be giving, so it's first two places from each way bet for outright Premier League, and that's at the third of the odds. So I think if you fancy the little cheeky bet, I've been saying it the last couple of weeks, and I maintain it as well, 25-1 Arsenal, I think they've been very overlooked, and I think they're coming in under the radar. I think that they're pretty fair enough prices. I think 2-1 could be a decent bet as well for Arsenal.
Yeah, nice. I think that sort of, them coming second will be a push because although, like, Arsenal, if you look at Arsenal midfield forward now, they look really good on paper. They've Aubameyang, Lacazette. I think Aubameyang will win the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
This season, just because of how he started. Well, from January onwards, 10 goals in 13 games is the quickest any Arsenal player's got to 10 Premier League goals. Lacazette's almost... It doesn't mirror Liverpool's style in terms of style, but if you look at how Firmino is the centre-forward but is more of a link man than a goal scorer, if you invert it and you've got Aubameyang being Arsenal's Salah in the sense that he might be playing wide, but all the goals are going to come through him, and then you've got Lacazette trying to link all that play, and then the right midfielder, they're either going to play Ozil sort of floating, sort of inverted playmaker there, or I think if Aaron Ramsey stays... I think Arsenal might, you might see this season, especially in bigger games, you might see Xhaka, Torreira as the two, like a double pivot in centre midfield, because Torreira will be Xhaka's legs and they can both distribute really well. And then you might see a return to Ramsey starting on the right-hand side, but not being a winger. But defensively, he'll track back and do that right. Him and Mkhitaryan will play the right. And then you've got Ozil as number 10 by shirt, number 10 by nature now, sitting in the middle.
At last.
And then Aubameyang left wing, but again, he'll probably end up being the furthest forward. It's like an asymmetric slope. So they are in, Arsenal are really interesting. I just think their defence is still bad.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really signed the centre. It's weird because they've signed, in Torreira, they've signed the defensive midfielder they've needed for years. They still haven't signed the centre half they've needed for years. Like, yeah. Koscielny is not the lead. I mean, they had Mertesacker, right? And that was their guy. That was the lead guy, the lead defender. Koscielny is not a lead defender. Mustafi's not a lead defender. And Sokratis is not a lead defender. Unless Rob Holding emerges into one. I don't know
this
what...
This is what I mean. I think Arsenal's centre-backs, they're all very similar level. And it's not a really high level yet.
Mm.
I really am excited. So I think, like, in terms of, like, narratives, we can... Arsenal can have Mavropanos and Sokratis play some games. Then you've got your little Greek duo developing with each other, a master and apprentice. And then Rob Holding and Callum Chambers can be playing some games together. They're best mates off the pitch. They're future England centre-backs, potentially. So there are sort of little pockets where we could see some really key development in Arsenal this season. So it may not come. It may not be good enough to get a first or second place in the Premier League. But again, there is some... The team might not be there yet, especially in defence, but... Potentially after a season, Arsenal could be more of a contender.
One last thing on Arsenal. I watch for Hector Bellerin to have probably his best season in an Arsenal shirt. Because one of the things that Unai Emery did at Sevilla was he turned Alex Vidal, who was like an average winger, into a fullback so good that Barcelona signed him to replace Dani Alves. That didn't work out mainly because of injuries. And he didn't really settle well. He didn't really handle the transfer ban thing, having to not play for 6 months. Didn't really handle that very well either. But... You look at Alex Vidal, he's still at Barcelona. The guy scored against Real Madrid last season. You know, Unai Emery basically made him that player. And he was a winger. And Hector Bellerin already is a fullback. So I would look to Hector Bellerin, lightning fast fullback that he is, to have a really, really good season. I think Emery will understand exactly how to unleash him in attack, how to cover him in defence, and I think he'll be really important for us.
That's the thing. If Torreira plays that right-hand side of a centre midfielder, then you've immediately got the cover. As soon as Bellerin bonds former, Torreira becomes a sort of pseudo right back and just covers that space, which Torreira is excellent at, and that's why Arsenal needed a player like that. Because Xhaka couldn't do the whole back four before, which was weird that Arsenal kept trying to ask him to do, because he was incapable, he's immobile. But now if he's only covering a left-hand space and knows Torreira's there behind him, that could be a key partnership to get the best out of Granit Xhaka, who towards the end of last season was one of Arsenal's better players. He's just a bit too mistake prone, but Torreira is sort of the anti-mistake player that Arsenal needed. So they're interesting, and I think the Premier League in general, as we said, the promoted sides coming up, there's more excitement about them than I can ever remember in terms of promoted sides. Brighton and Huddersfield last year was excitement because it was their first time, whereas this year it's like we've got Wolves, Fulham are back, and they've got styles and they've got players. So Premier League this season is really, again, to use the word that sort of seems to be the theme, it could be quite volatile. You could get someone break in. And this is without talking about people like Leicester, who, again, have sold Mahrez, but they've brought in Maddison and brought in some exciting
players. I think the bottom half's going to be really competitive. Because you look at even the... Like, you would have thought, OK, Brighton or Huddersfield, the glow has worn off, they'll get relegated. They've signed signed so well. So I would... You can't even say they're going to get relegated now. Who do you think... Look at the team. Look at the Premier League. Who do you think they're going to go down? I mean... You can't really pick anyone. It's like everyone's got a good chance. It's going to be very interesting to watch this season.
Absolutely, just needed to start now. unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today, though. So thanks to our guest, Jake.
No, very good to be on again. Thank you.
Mo.
Looking forward to the season starting soon.
And Pete.
Thanks very much, guys. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, guys. We'll catch you next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.